Beyond Words on KCLU.
Greetings, my name is Fran Halpern, and this is Beyond Words. When writers create characters, they also give us place, and particularly the mystery authors who put their crime solvers in Santa Teresa, read Santa Barbara, or New Jersey, New Orleans, and of course Los Angeles. Our guests today focus on place as the characters in their books. Local author Karen Talene Lawton paints a unique and romantic description in Canyon Voices, The Nature of Rattlesnake Canyon. And Steve Highmore, former contributor to The Wine Spectator and West Coast editor of Wine Enthusiast magazine, takes us on an entertaining tour in his A Wine Journey Along the Russian River. Join us for lively conversation about snakes and wine right after the news from NPR.
It's time for Beyond Words with Fran Halpern. Beyond Words is KCLU's weekly exploration of writing, publishing, and the creative process, whether you're a writer or a reader. And now, another edition of KCLU's Beyond Words.
Well, welcome to October. It's my favorite month. Today's riddle author, and by the way, reminder, stay tuned toward the end of the hour for the riddle. Anyway, our riddle author has said the only reason to write is to help people understand each other. The other reason to write is to bring people in touch with their environment. Our guests, Canyon Voices author Karen Talene Lawton and Steve Heimoff, author of Wine Journey Along the Russian River. He will join us later in the hour. They have both done that beautifully. Karen Talene Lawton is a graduate of Stanford, studied math and engineering, and earned graduate degrees in economics and environmental policy. She taught economics courses online for Regis University, began writing while living in Colorado, and focused on the writing career after the move with her family to Santa Barbara. Karen is a botanic garden docent. Canyon Voices is her first book, and her passion is the natural world, which she observes is worthy of our protection for its beauty, its economic value, and sanctity. Karen, welcome to Beyond Words.
Thank you for having me.
I'm absolutely delighted. What changed your direction from engineering and economics to nature and the environment? I guess it was that you were very greedy to make lots of money, right?
Yeah, you make lots of money in writing, as we all know.
Mm-hmm.
Engineering was kind of an adventure, I think. I didn't know any engineers in my family, but it was something that growing up in high school in the 70s, everyone was encouraging girls who were good at math and science to go into engineering. And I thought, well, that sounds fun. Never been inside a factory or anything. And I enjoyed it as a major and as a kind of a something to challenge the brain and learn how to solve problems. I think I liked the problem solving part of it, but once I got into industry, it didn't fit. I went to things that I love more, which from growing up, my parents had strong environmental values, and that fit more, and I've been doing it and writing it ever since.
During that class time and that college time, were you one of the few women in engineering classes at that time, or?
It depended on the type of engineering. I was in industrial engineering, which a lot of people went into kind of computer things from there, and operations research. There were about 15% women in the 70s. In something like electrical engineering, there were more like 3%.
And your writing career, I know you began writing and getting published while you were still living with your family in Colorado. You were sending out articles, short stories to various local magazines. What kind of writing did you do then?
I did more on the family. Like my first published piece was with Family Fun, which is a national magazine that writes about the family, and I did something about, it's called Table Topics. I actually got it from Toastmasters, where we used to do table topics, and it was just putting little pieces of paper in a basket in the center of the table that were topics, and anyone could pick out a topic and talk about it or choose another one. And it was a good way to have family discussions, so I wrote about that and lots of other kind of child-rearing issues that I enjoyed.
And do you still do that now that you're, after you've had your first book published, Canyon Voices, are you still writing shorter pieces?
Oh, yes. I write quite a bit for Santa Barbara Seasons magazine, Stanford magazine, and wherever else I can get in. I enjoy writing shorter pieces. And the only part I don't like as much is just sending them in, and it's just as arduous to find the right place for the right piece. So at least with a book, you get to do a whole lot of writing before you have to work on the marketing aspect.
Well, before we leave the topic of getting shorter pieces published, you didn't have any special contacts, I'm assuming. It's you write the piece or you do a query about what you'd like to write and ship it off to magazines after you do some research, hoping you're hitting the mark?
Yes, I've found, and I've heard it, I've been to writer's classes and writer's conferences and things, and the tip that I think has meant the most to me is to start with a small, like the department area of a magazine, and offer a little piece, and then once you've written one or two that way, then you offer a feature or offer some topics that you can do a feature length. But magazines really don't like to accept a long piece when they don't know you yet, because a lot of writers are flaky. I mean, you know, got to admit it. Some people don't follow through, and so until they know they can count on you as a writer, they only will offer shorter pieces.
Yeah, that's the other side of the coin. We're always sitting around ragging on editors and agents and publishers, but the other response is writers. Just as you said, writers don't always follow through, and they can be flaky, and sometimes they're not even very good writers. They can write a great query letter, and that's the end of that.
Right.
There is a line in the description of Canyon Voices that says we have a joyful and uneasy relationship there is between humans and nature. How did Canyon Voices evolve, and how did you decide to take on this absolutely incredible work at this point, a huge work because there's so much research that had to go into it?
Well, I moved to Rattlesnake Canyon in 2001. My husband and I moved here in 1980 the first time, and then we had to leave for a few years to make money, you know. But now we're back, and we immediately wanted to move to the mountain area because we love the mountains. And I got to know Rattlesnake Trail. I had taken the kids on it when they were little, and now they're out of the house. And I just thought that the canyon evoked all sorts of stories from different perspectives. When I got to know people who knew Rattlesnake Canyon from different perspectives, like the geologist in my book, Dr. Ed Keller, told me about the debris flows and things that have flowed down, and you start to look at the land differently when you hear different people's stories about it. And it seemed like a way to kind of tell the story of the canyon. In fact, one of the early working names I had was Biography of the Canyon, because it seemed like it was telling its story through people that understood it from different perspectives.
And this is also an illustrated book, a number of lovely photos of the canyon, the waterfalls, on and on and on in the canyon. And can people follow the book, walk through the canyon with the book, say, tucked under their arm?
And it's not designed as a trail guide.
Yeah.
And there are good trail guides. Ray Ford, who's one of the people in the book, has actually written a couple trail guides. But I think if you had read ahead, you would see the canyon differently. So there's some physical things that you might note, like, you know, looking, several of the people that have read the book have said, now I'm looking for the caves, you know. Mm-hmm. So you might bring it up to look for the caves or look for some of the physical markers, the historical things, mm-hmm. like tin can flats and that type of thing. But it won't tell you where to turn left and where to turn right and where you'll find the water.
Yeah, but I mean, in going through into different chapters and saying, oh, I'd like to see that. I think I want to go over there and particularly see that, experience it, feel it. Okay, when did you decide then that this should be a book, and what was the next step?
I would say I knew I wanted to write a book about the environment, but I didn't want to, well, I wanted to get across several points, one being that spending time with nature will deepen all your relationships from personal to spiritual to nature, and the biodiversity is the most important environmental issue. Stewardship in the environment is everyone's business, and mm-hmm. the environment doesn't have a voice or a vote, and we need to take care of it. But I felt like saying those things is, you know, didactic, and no one wants to hear them, and so the way to do it would be telling people's stories, and that's how I came upon this format for doing it. Mm-hmm. I think I've wanted to write a book about the environment for as long as I've wanted to write a book. I didn't know what form it would be until I got to know Rattlesnake Canyon.
And it's kind of a risky business, isn't it? Because you put an enormous amount of time on who published, and I'm wondering, did you get an advance, or was this a complete risk in getting this book out first?
I would say it's a complete risk. It's a local publisher, and I have an agent that I've had. I actually had a previous manuscript, and the agent marketed that manuscript for a year and a half or so and didn't find a publisher for that one. That one is about the family. Looking at the having raised your kids and looking at the second half of life. And she, when this woman takes on clients, this is Liz Troopin-Pooley of Santa Fe, she takes you on for whatever works. She she understands that the first one might not sell, and she takes you on because she believes in you as a writer. Mm-hmm. So she wanted this one also, and she marketed it nationally for about a year. The last year that I was writing it, she was marketing a proposal that included three chapters and other material. And at the end, when she hadn't found a national, she said, well, you should start looking locally also. And then I found Mission Creek Studios, which is just down the street. And they've published, I think this is their fifth or sixth book, and they have a couple more coming out this fall, mainly art, local, and local history.
And when the rejections came in from the publishers, the agent was, I assume, targeting publishers that would possibly publish photo books, books about nature, the environment, etc. Did they say it's too local? Was that the problem? That even though this really has a larger impact, people can look around and say, do we have canyons here in my, or any kind of environmental background, and start poking around to see what's going on? But was it that the publishers felt it was too local?
They did. They all said extremely well written. They loved the material, but they thought it was local. And of course, you know, we said it's not local. You look at Aldo Leopold and Edward Abbey and Terry Tempest Williams, mm-hmm. and you know, John McPhee, Wallace Stegner. They all write about a specific place. Place's character, and yet it applies to everyone and every time. And so that's what we try to get across, but it isn't across yet. It might be for its second printing.
Uh-huh. And it's doing well, and you're doing a lot of autographing around author signing.
I wouldn't say I'm getting writer's cramp yet, but I'm having fun.
Well, actually, you see, I think one should adopt a name, you know, like Anne Rice. When you're out autographing, it's you'll put your initials down and say, this is my signing the book name.
Ah, yes.
Because you have a hyphenated name, you know, Karen. And I'm going to spend Karen, everybody knows how to spell Karen, K-A-R-E-N, right?
That's the right way, yes.
And it's T-A-L-L-E-E-N dash Lawton, L-A-W-T-O-N. So, okay, you're Karen Talene Lawton.
T-E-L-L. I think, I'm not sure if you said T-E or T.
Yeah, T-E. Whatever I said. T-E-L-L-E-E. T-E-L-L-E-E-N. I'm all right. Yeah, enough.
It's a bunch of loops. You just keep writing loops and you get there.
Enough about that. Now, the research, you had to interview a lot of different people. How did you work that out?
I went from one to the other generally by... When I found one that I knew was the right one, I asked them and interviewed them, and it was hard to do the first few because I didn't have anything to show. I'm not an expert myself, but when I showed interest in them and in their work and in what they loved, which is the environment, they were happy to talk to me, and I would usually spend two sessions, tape the sessions, and then transcribed it, you know, a lot of work in there, and then got questions answered and that type of thing. And usually along the way, they would say, you know, who you should talk to is this person. And then I would approach that person just as I'm looking for information on, and have a conversation first before I decided whether they were appropriate for the book.
Mm-hmm. And the photographs, how did you do those?
The photographs?
Yeah.
Some are mine. Mm-hmm. Over the years, and because I live close by, I was able to go in times of storm and take the high water pictures, and then we happen to have that nice snow last February, I guess it was. We zipped up to the top of Rattlesnake Canyon and took some pictures in the snow. Others are ones that either someone who was interviewed in the book, like Matt Stecker, sent some trout pictures and bird pictures by another friend who has taken a lot of bird pictures around town and had the particular ones that are available in Rattlesnake Canyon. Thorsten Van Eyken is that one, and I took the ones for hang gliding. And they evolved from, well, the historical ones are from Mount Calvary, of the fire. Mm-hmm. So those were exciting to get. They're beautiful pictures of Rattlesnake Canyon right after the Coyote Fire in 1964. So various sources.
It's Rattlesnake Canyon. Is it, I think, I'm just finding out. Oh, by the way, the format of the book is very user-friendly. It's the kind of thing that you can maybe tuck into a suitcase to take with you or tuck into an envelope to send off to somebody. There again, who designed the book? Were you involved in any way as the author, or did the publisher do all of that?
The publisher and I and a graphic artist worked on it together and looked at different things from the size of the book, which we went and looked at books in bookstores to find out what jumps out, what type of colors, what type of size, and just went from there to, so I had decision points at each place, and Anna Lafferty, who's the designer, did a great job in laying out and saying this is going to work, this isn't going to work, and so because it was a local publisher, I had a lot of rein in deciding the way I wanted things, and I didn't really understand what a good thing that was until one of the other people in my book group is having a book published by, I think it's University of Missouri Press, Karen Fennell, mm-hmm. and she, it's wonderful that she has a national publisher. I think that's great that she doesn't have all the control of the decision. Mm-hmm. So in some senses, I'm glad that it was locally published.
Well, then I'll ask you a personal question then. Was it easy to make the decisions, or did you really ponder and worry and lie awake nights, or were you able to say, yes, this is the way it should be?
As far as layout?
Yeah, and, just and all the decisions about the book, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The layout and how things should look were not hard, especially because the graphic artist was experienced and had opinions, and I trusted her opinions. I think the harder ones were, you know, the financial or how many to publish and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I laid awake nights. I really tried to, there were hard decisions, but I also recognized that this was the culmination of 3.5 years of work, and I really wanted to enjoy this part of it. So I tried to minimize how much I stressed out, but I do stress out.
Well, that would be normal in nature and normal in human nature. Are rattlesnakes only found in the Americas?
Oh, that's a good question. They're definitely.
I know they're
only
all.
New World.
Yeah.
I believe so, but I actually don't know the answer to that.
I think there is something. Well, here there's a on page 69 in your book. There's a piece about rattlesnakes, and you say in here rattlesnakes no longer suffer wholesale persecution, though that may be mostly because of their extermination from populated areas. Uh-huh. So I'm just wondering whether in the late 1940s, rattlesnakes still suffered people's active vengeance. As a matter of fact, when I first moved to California, it was on the Palos Verdes Peninsula, within a week we found that there was a baby rattlesnake had taken up residence in our garage.
The babies actually are more dangerous because they haven't learned how to control the amount of venom that they use.
Well, I'm glad I didn't know that then, because unlike most New Yorkers, the city folk, I was not hysterical, appalled, and I knew there was somebody who was supposed to call to come and take it and put it back out into the I don't think we killed it. I hope we didn't kill it. I thought maybe they picked it up and put it back out where it belongs and not in the Halpern's garage. Now, you said you loved the mountains, and when you came to the Santa Barbara area, you sought out a residence that would be in the canyons or close to the mountains. Here again, perhaps a philosophical question. I personally love the beach, and mountains kind of scare me a little bit. So what motivated you, or what informed you? Well, you lived in Colorado. I guess that's a mountainous state. And you fell in love with that kind of geography?
Yeah, it's interesting whether if we had made the excursion to Colorado, if we hadn't done that, would we have come back and wanted to be in the mountains?
Mm-hmm.
I think the kids having gone off to their own lives, we kind of felt like we could live wherever we wanted, and it's less populated up in the foothills. The beaches are great. I love going to the beach. I ride my bike to the beach sometimes, which is really quick to get there. It's like 15 minutes, but getting back is a little hard.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like the beaches are more accessible when I want to. I can see, not the beaches, but I can see a little bit of ocean patch out of my window. But, I mean, for instance, today, right before you called, a buck and a doe walked right by the window.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you can't replace that. I mean, you can have a sandpiper walk by you at the beach, but you're just surrounded here by nature, and you're affected more. And in a way, I guess that's what you're saying, is that it's a little mysterious and dangerous seeming, and it is. You're more affected by nature here. We have the rattlesnakes, and we have the danger of fire omnipresent. We have the deer, and it's just, you feel like you... I mean, since I need to say you're part of nature, but you are more. You're surrounded by it, and you have to deal with it, and so it mm-hmm. becomes your friend and something that you have to think about and deal with.
Well, and the overall message in your book, in Canyon Voices, which I'm sure is available around in the bookstores at this
yes.
point.
It's,
oh, and you're going to be signing. What day are you signing, and what time and where? Your next
today at Tekeloti, 3 mm-hmm. o'clock Saturday
uh-huh.
is the next one, so you'd have to run over there now, I think.
Uh-huh.
The Borders is October 19th, and then one up at Wild Lang Art Museum on October 21st,
okay.
and one down in Pasadena that you probably don't want to go to.
So Borders, October 19th, at what time?
7 o'clock.
7 p.m. in Borders
yes.
On State Street, October 19th. And today at 3 o'clock, so when you get through listening and answer the riddle, you can pop over to Tekeloti and meet Karen Talene Lawton and
perfect.
See her book. So the overall message then, and are you optimistic about your passion?
About the environment?
I
think so, because more and more people do, they might not say I'm an environmentalist, but they act in... they understand and they act in ways that show their caring and that they need to do this for themselves and for future generations. It's whether we're willing to act in the big enough ways that we need to, because we've done so much damage. That's the hard part. It's just, it depends on getting out and voicing and voting.
And recycling and preserving and caring. I guess just taking a walk out there without earphones on, you know, I see people jogging, and I know they're learning something, whether they're learning a foreign language or they're taking an engineering course via their earphones as they're out jogging. And this is sort of a funny little crank of mine. I think take those earphones off and sort of snoop around and smell your environment and look at it and touch things. And
it's true, even the bird calls in uh-huh. Rattlesnake Canyon. Sometimes you can't see the birds, but you can hear the canyon wren, which is just an incredibly beautiful mm-hmm. descending trill, and you can't experience it until you take off the earphones and put on the hiking shoes and get out there.
And are you working on another book, Karen?
I am working on articles and working on marketing this book, but I haven't yet started the book. Mm-hmm. I'm reading a lot. I'm actually reading in history, and we'll see where it leads. I like to take complex issues and then and try to make them understandable.
So all those wonderful courses you took, which probably is a nice platform to stand on, engineering, research, math, science, Karen Taline Lawton, author of Canyon Voices, The Nature of Rattlesnake Canyon. You can meet her this afternoon at Tekeloti in the Upper Village in Montecito, or on October 19th at Borders Books and Music on State Street in Santa Barbara. Thank you very much. I really appreciate you taking the time and alerting us all to get out there, look at the environment, look at nature, and then help to preserve it for the next for ourselves as well as the next generation. Thanks a million, Karen. We'll talk again.
Thank you.